I don't want to say I'm becoming as bitter as like somebody like John Carpenter. Like, I don't know if you've seen him lately in interviews.
John's on a roll tonight.
He's like burned. Like, I was watching, like I'm watching this documentary, and like he's like talking about how like he couldn't make the horror movies or the movies he made in the 80s today, blah blah blah. And then like he just seems so. Yeah. Besides that, it was like a general attitude vibe that I get from him that he's just like so bitter and unhappy and like.
Crack open a cold box of wine or pour something cold on ice because it's the Binge Watchers Podcast.
So I read this story that Seth Rogen got brought in to write the jokes for Dr. Doolittle. You know, RDJ's, like, next million-dollar launch. You know, like, he was... Like, Robert Downey Jr. thought that, like, the Dr. Doolittle remake was going to be, like, this billion-dollar blockbuster, and he could leave Tony Stark behind. You know?
He was wrong.
Well, he was way wrong. Like, to the point where I'm like, now he has to go crawling back to Marvel, right? Like, before, it was like, oh, we can't make a Marvel movie without you. Oh, shit, we just created four other stars to make the next series of other Marvel movies. We don't need you anymore. By the way, how's your Dr. Doolittle movie doing? You know? Like,
oh, embarrassing.
But the fact that, like, yes, Rogan's like, yeah, they brought me in to write jokes. And I'm like, holy hell. Now we know why they got to a farting dragon. Like, that has to be a Rogan joke.
I read other articles that it was actually, I think, RDJ.
I wanted to stick his hand in a dragon's ass in the third act, bring it all home, tie it all together.
What the hell happened in this movie?
Now Nick's going to watch it. It's in his playlist now.
The guy who was hired to direct it is like, he's known for making serious dramas like Syriana. So, of course, natural fit for Dr. Doolittle.
Oh, man. So basically, Dr. Doolittle just went out and like he like tried to get all these talented people to try to make this movie. And it's just like a salad that just wilted too fast, right? Like, oh, we'll mix it all together. It'll be great. And it just, the recipe doesn't work. You know? It doesn't always work. I mean, you think about that. Like, some people can't work together. Sometimes the magic just isn't there, right? I mean, put certain things together just doesn't work out. Like, I would say they made history with the Expendable movies, right? Like, you had every action star from the 80s and early 90s in the same movie.
Yeah.
And again, maybe it's overkill. You know, some of them aren't great. Like, every other one is good.
I love the second one. Expendables 2. I stand by that one, let me tell you.
Is that the one with Chuck Norris?
Yeah, Chuck Norris and Van Damme's the villain.
Yeah, there you go.
Sure.
Yeah, it was a winning formula.
And they're still trying to make Dave's Christmas one. Are you attached to that project, Dave? Dave, they owe you money for that movie, Dave. Like, I mean, just go back in our podcast, folks. Dave created that movie like 2 years ago. They owe him some cash. That was his idea. Expendables Christmas edition. Or a very Expendables Christmas. That's a great movie. Everybody
what is
wants
it,
to
what
watch
is it. The, what would the tagline be like this year? The war on Christmas is being fought by the Expendables?
I don't know. See, now you're tanking your own idea. I just said it was a great idea, and then you said a line that's not that strong.
Don't pitch that to the studio.
Yeah. Dave just has the idea, folks. He doesn't have to write them. He just gets paid the big bucks just to come up with the ideas. Pass it along to some other schlubby screenwriter to come up with the script. Let's see. Oh, and then this is courtesy of Nicky T, also called Nicky Lates on our show.
Yes.
He threw this out the other day. He's like, did you see this news story about... Courtney Cox coming back for Gail Weathers in Scream 5. I was like, damn, rush that right to our social media, you know? That's a big story. That was like breaking news for 5 seconds.
Yeah. That's great. I know Nev's already on. Is Arquette on?
Wait, no. I thought Arquette was the first one to sign up. I thought Dewey...
Oh, he was?
Okay. I think David Arquette was like the first one in. And now it's like rounding out the cast, like to get all the originals back. Dude, I was thinking, I don't know if we talked about this. Like, if you go back to the beginning of our Summer Slash Marathon, we started with the Scream series in our little summer horror movie run here. And we were plotting out our versions, our fantastic versions of what Scream 5 could be. I don't remember now, like, what is this, like, 10 weeks later? I don't remember if in that episode we said that what if, what's his name, who got killed, who was the horror movie fan? What's his name?
Matthew Lillard.
No, not Matt Lillard, coming back from the sane asylum. We threw that plot out there, but did we talk about, gosh, why am I blanking on this?
Jamie Kennedy's character,
yeah. What is his character's name? I forgot. Damn.
Randy,
the horror movie fan. So what if, like, this roundabout way, like, he's not dead? Like, he orchestrated the whole thing or something, you know? Like, I don't know if we ever touched on him being the killer. When we probably did. I should have gone back and found out if we discussed it, because we could have already have. Who the hell knows? We talked about... I think we sat there for about a half hour and came up with every Scream 5 plot that we could think of.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, we came up with a lot.
Yeah. And ultimately, the best one, I think, was like if Sydney was the killer the entire time.
Yeah.
That would blow people's minds, but who knows? And that they should include... We were talking about they should include social media and, like, the WhatsApp app.
I remember saying... Yeah, I definitely remember that.
Yeah.
Or, like, you get a text before you die. Or they ask questions through texting.
Yeah. And you don't know who's sending out the messages. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Be cool as hell. Anyway, everybody's looking forward to Scream 5.
Well, and they for sure need to kill one of those three. They need to kill Nev, Arquette, or Cox.
Like, you got to drop them in, like, the first 10 minutes, right? Just to make a statement? You got to kill one of the OGs.
You got to go in. You didn't do it with four. You got to do it in five.
Man, it would probably have to be Detective Dewey, right? Or Chief Dewey now? He's probably the chief of police, right? And by Scream 5, he's got to be, like, the chief, right?
Yeah, he's that guy that was smoking cigarettes in the first one. Yeah, for sure now. Isn't that crazy how time flies? Wow.
It does a little bit, indeed.
Yeah.
Dave claims there's an underrated filmmaker out there that people should know about who actually passed away. Dave.
Yeah, Alan Parker, great British director. I mean, he's done a ton of, like, he had a pretty diverse filmography, but, I mean, his biggest things were probably Pink Floyd, The Wall, Bugsy Malone, Midnight Express, Mississippi Burning. The one I really love of his is Road to Whaleville, which was a weird movie with John Cusack.
I forgot about that one.
It's such a good movie. It's about the Kellogg factory back in the 1900s. It has like a great cast of Anthony Hopkins, John Cusack, Bridget Fonda.
Isn't Matthew Broderick?
Yeah. Matthew Broderick in it too. It's like a turn. It's a period comedy from the early 1900s, or that takes place in the early 1900s.
That's like your favorite of his run or whatever. Like
that's my personal favorite. I mean, yeah. Also, I recently discovered Birdie a few years ago, and that's like a crazy movie just in terms of cinematography. I still don't know how he pulled it off in 1984. Today, I would say it's a drone. Yeah,
crane,
I mean,
shots, maybe they used to use jib arms and cranes, right? So
yeah, I mean, you just have to see the movie for yourself to just see how the camera just flows, go do these sweeping. I don't know, you have to see it, but
not the jazz artist though, right? Because it wasn't that a Clint Eastwood movie about the jazz artist. Is that a movie about a jazz musician?
That's Bird. Yeah, I know that's easy to confuse. There's Bird and then there's Birdie.
Yeah. Okay. Two different movies.
The Birdie is with Nicolas Cage and Matthew Modine about Vietnam shell shock, basically.
Oh, really?
Hmm. Yeah, it's actually a really good movie.
I'll have to look it up. I made notes to look that up. All I know about the Road to Whaleville guy, like the Kellogg's guy, you know, he made cornflakes as like a snack to deter like masturbation or something. Like he was like obsessed with like repressing sexuality, and then like
a nut,
and he supposedly like put a bunch of money into circumcisions. Like he was like if anybody was standing there with like a poster, let's circumcise the whole nation. He was like that guy. So yeah, he was a psychopath and with money, a psychopath with money. But he's probably in like a History Channel special of like one of the guys that built America, you know, Mr. Kellogg's. Yeah. Eat your cornflakes, get your circumcision. Line up, kids. You know, like, yeah, he's an absolute lunatic. But maybe Alan Parker made a good movie. Who knows? He's kind of crazy in that movie, though, isn't he? Isn't he pretty like eccentric? The depiction of the guy?
It's I don't know. I don't think you can call it a true story. I think it's more of a comedy based, loosely based on true events. Because, yeah. I mean, it's pretty wacky. So I don't know how close to the truth it is.
Wasn't Wellville just like a retreat for the rich people? Like they would like to try out all this nutritional workout, like spa, all this crap? Like turn of the century health ideas or whatever?
Yeah, but I mean, there's like a... It's pretty. Oh, Dana Carvey's in it too. And if this sells you on it, Dana Carvey slings boxes of shit at people at some point. So there's that too.
Why didn't you start there, David? Like start there, and then, you know what I mean. Like don't just tell us like we're talking about some crusty old British director. Just be like, this movie has Dana Carvey flinging shit at people. Okay, I'm in. What channel is it on? You know, or like where can I download it? You know. Start there, David. See, David, we got to teach Dave marketing skills, Nick. Really.
Yeah, yeah. Like, because he's like, yeah.
Yeah. Because I say he has this great thing called Expendables Christmas, and then he's like, it's a war on Christmas. And then, then he's like, Road to Wellville. Like, come on. Like, now you start with the shit flinging, Dave. That's how you sell that's how you get ass in the seats. That's how you sell the tickets. You start with the shit, the poop. You start there, David. That's your highest point. Note you taken. Have to start there. And then they'll be like, he gave away the best scene in the trailer. He showed the shit flinging right away. Yeah, but that's marketing, kids. That's marketing. We got to guarantee that you buy the tickets. That's all. Man. So there you go. You learn something new every day, and we just taught our audience something new. Take notes. Marketing notes. Take it down. All right. Jean-Claude is finally getting his Netflix deal.
Ooh,
he has an action comedy moving to Netflix called The Last Mercenary. This you could see almost like writing on the wall. Like eventually, Stallone's going to get a Netflix deal. Lundgren's going to get a Netflix deal. They're all going to go to Netflix.
Makes sense. I mean, the DVD market's dying at this point, right? So might as well.
Well, because DVDs
pretty much for years, guys.
Yeah, it makes sense. But I was about to say, like, isn't Netflix the DirecTV market now? Like, all these guys, all these action heroes with their movies direct to video, DVDs, before that VHS, it makes sense, direct to video, right to a Netflix deal.
Yeah.
Like, that's the pipeline.
I'm sure he's not making crazy money like Stallone would or Schwarzenegger would, but I'm sure he made decent money off this.
Hmm.
Yeah. It's an action comedy? Do we know what it's about?
Yeah, he's, Secret Service. He's in the Secret Service.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. That's it. That's all they've announced so far. It's an action comedy.
There's your pitch. Action comedy, Jean-Claude Van Damme's in the Secret Service.
Secret Service. Cool. But
I'm sold.
All you had to say was Jean-Claude Van Damme, Muscles from Brussels on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in.
All right.
I'll check it out. Even if it sucks, I'll watch like 10 minutes or go to an action scene at least.
So I don't know if you guys saw this on Twitter, but John Cryer and Ben Stiller were sending back a bunch of tweets about the original script that got passed around during the casting of Back to the Future, and that the time machine, originally the secret ingredient to make the time machine run, was Coca-Cola from the 1950s. I was like, that's interesting because I think when they made the movie, they had New Coke out, right? Because they made the movie in the 80s. And they weren't using the original recipe in the 80s, and it was like this big controversy. Remember when like they demanded that they bring back the original Coke flavor?
Yeah.
So I was like, wow. I was thinking, like, what's unique about a 1950s bottle of Coca-Cola? I was like, oh, at the time, it would have had the original recipe, and so they're saying it's full of all the magical goodness of the Coke or whatever, right? Or if you're going by the scientific formula, Coke was one of the original three or four sodas that dominated popular culture for like 100 years or something, right? So...
that's cool.
Or it's another Mac and me. Coca-Cola was paying for Back to the Future. Who knows? You know what I mean? Like, the secret
now, were
ingredient.
John Cryer and Ben Stiller, did they try out for Back to the Future? I didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
They were up for, they read for Marty McFly.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. I can kind of picture Ducky, or, you know, like John Cryer being in that.
Yeah, I think John Cryer of the two would have been a better Marty.
I can't see Ben Stiller, but John Cryer I could totally see.
Yeah.
Especially because at that time, I mean, that was 2 years later, he played Ducky in Pretty in Pink. I mean, he would have been pretty right on for that role, I think.
Huh.
It would have been interesting. I think he was a better choice than, Eric Stoltz, in my opinion.
So, as you know, like, what's the gold standard for rating movies today? Probably, like, Rotten Tomatoes. I think a lot of people look for the tomato meters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could look on Google, whatever, see what users are doing, or you could look at, like, what's the other one? Metacritic or something? But for the most part, like, I think everybody in the audience looks to, instead of asking their, well, so I guess they can ask friends, or they can listen to us on Binge Watchers podcast and get the answer, and like, to know whether or not to watch a movie. But I think most people go to Rotten Tomatoes, and recently they've been ranking up the Christian Slater movies, and then this other website, Screen Rant, decided to put them together. So this is like the tomato meter, like these are the top ranked by users, so these are just audience members of Christian Slater movies. And it's almost like we're about to play a game because we're going to see like, how they rank them and then compare them to our, like, you know, top three Christian Slaters. I'm really surprised. I made some notes because some movies are not on the list or some movies are on the list, like, in places that I think, like, they could be, you know, closer to the top three or whatever. But, all right, so number 10. Do you remember when Blockbuster was kicking out Blockbuster releases, like, exclusives, like, movies that they had titles to or whatever?
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys saw this one. He was a quiet man. That's where he's the office worker who wants to kill his coworkers, and then he shows up on the day to do it when, like, another coworker is trying to take out the office, and then he ends up being a hero.
Yeah, I saw it. It was a weird movie, but kind of cool.
Yeah, a weird indie, right? Like, just like...
Yeah, and he had, like, this weird bald look to him. It was really interesting.
Yeah, he embraced his natural hairline in this one.
Yeah, and now he's like suddenly got his hairline back. It's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. So the movie was probably pre-hair-plugged Christian Slater, right?
It might be. Yeah.
Yeah, like he was embracing it, kind of like how John Travolta's embracing his head now.
I know. Thank God.
I wonder if plugs must be temporary. They say it's real hair, but maybe it dies. Maybe it falls out. I don't know.
I don't know. But John Travolta's like his hair started to look really bad. Or the past 5 years, but yeah. That's a different story.
That's a different story.
We can do a top five, like, John Travolta toupee list, too, one day.
Oh, shit. We could rank his movies by how his hair looked?
Yeah. Because like, I figure, like, around, like, 2000s when he started to go bald, that's when I started noticing. And, man, those toupees and John Travolta got bad. And I think, and you know, but Christian Slater is kind of, his hair always kind of looks good. I don't know who this guy is, but I would go to him.
Since you're the other Christian Slater, you should find out. Who's your hair guy, Chris? You know, who's your hair guy?
Give me the hair guy, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, folks, he doesn't mean Christian Slater, so we get into this top 10, he'll start poking out. Watch.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's coming.
Yeah. So number 9, I've never seen this movie, but I'm kind of intrigued now. It's called Where the Day Takes You. It's from 92. It's got a bunch of people, looks like.
Will Smith.
Yeah, Will Smith's in it, Ricky Lake. It's some kind of drama about, like, 90s kids dealing with, you know, a bunch of crazy shit. Drugs, alcohol, violence, prostitution, whatever. Will Smith, Sean Astin, Dermot Mulroney, Laura Flynn Boyle. It looks interesting. I don't know. It's ranked number 9. I've never even heard of the movie. I thought maybe Dave would know about that one.
I know about it.
It sounds vaguely familiar, but I couldn't tell you anything about it. It might have been a TV movie or something.
Nah, it went to theaters, but it was okay. Huh. It was independent more.
Here's a solid pick for number 8, but I think it deserves to be like in the top 3. Pump Up the Volume is number 8 with an 81% user rating.
Wow.
Such a good movie.
So Pump Up the Volume, he's a DJ with an elite, like a pirate radio band that all the kids in this town are listening to. And it's kind of during that era where, like, teens started to rebel against their parents because their parents were fucked up. It's the same kind of parents of Nightmare on Elm Street. It's these yuppie parents of, like, a certain... It's, like, the parents that became adults in, like, the 50s and 60s, and then they have, like, the 80s kids. And the 80s kids are, what, Gen Xers, right? So they're like, hey, we disagree with you. And then it was, like, the kids were committing suicide in this movie. It's kind of a really dark movie, but... If you got Christian Slater in there, it brings the darkness down a little bit so they can deal with these really intense things, but then also has, like, he's doing a pretty good job, you know, like, playing Hard Harry. You know, he's, like, a very quiet kid at school, but then he, like, gets on the, he becomes, like, a shock jock, almost like a,
Howard Stern is.
Yeah, like a Stern or something.
Light.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's a really great, it's a great movie. Yeah.
The next one is just a cameo, but it's ranking at 82%. Star Trek: The Undiscovered Country, which is part 6 of the original movies. He plays a communications officer who literally pops in and pops out, but apparently he wanted this cameo because he's like a huge Star Trek fan.
Yeah.
So you know, Captain Sulu, he pops in and says, "Hey, we got the news." You do it, Nick. Say, like, "Hey, I got some. We found out where the Enterprise is." So, you know, like,
Captain Sulu, may I come into your quarters?
Oh, yes, you may.
We caught the guy.
Well, Christian Slater, why don't you come in the place?
All right, maybe I will.
Yeah, there you go, Captain Sulu.
That's pretty good,
Christian Slater. Thank
that's
you,
exactly what happens in the movie. That was word for word exactly what happens.
That was exactly
that's exactly what happens.
The script.
Yeah. Blink and you miss it. Here's another one. There's a guy named Tucker who was trying to build his own car to compete with like Ford and Chevy, and they boxed him out of the industry. It's a Francis Ford Coppola movie with Jeff Bridges playing this guy. This is called Tucker, the Man in His Dream. And apparently Christian Slater played Tucker Jr. This came out in 88. It's ranked again, 83%, ranked as number 6.
It's a great movie. I like it.
Oh, you do like it. See, it's not even on my list at all.
It's good. I haven't seen it in years, but I remember really liking it. And it's got like a really cool visual style.
Oh, all right. Fair enough. Now, number 5 is called The Wife. It's got Glenn Close, and it's about like a writer who lives in the shadow of her writer husband or whatever, and she's like fed up with it or something, and they have like a breakdown in their marriage. I don't know who Christian Slater plays in this movie. Either their child or like their agent or something.
This is one I've seen now.
Okay. All right, Dave. Tell us about this one.
He plays like a reporter that's trying to kind of expose, because the wife is Glenn Close, who plays like a Pulitzer Prize winning author's wife, and Christian Slater is like a reporter trying to sniff out like that she's really the ghostwriter of all this award winning stuff. So it's actually a pretty good movie. But
yeah, is it worth the number 5 spot?
I mean, no, not really. I mean, if you're talking about just his roles, I mean, he's like a third tier character. I mean, he's an important character, but not,
Oh.
Yeah.
And this one came out.
I would say of his movies, no.
Now, this is a random one, and of course, this is just because of the internet and just because of the way people consume movies. Number 4, with an 80% rating, is Suicide Squad Hell to Pay, which is a cartoon from the Suicide Squad, DC Suicide Squad, and he voiced the Deadshot character, who in the live-action movie I think is played by Will Smith, Slater played him in the cartoon, and that's ranked number 4, this is ridiculous, folks. Like, this is like an accident, an anomaly, anomaly.
That doesn't seem right.
It can't be number 4. It shouldn't even be in his top 10. Like, it's really, it's an animated. Listen, there's a lot of great actors that do a lot of good voice acting. Apparently, Christian Slater has dabbled in it. I was looking at his IMDb. Yeah, he has like 20 voice actor credits and a bunch of cartoons, whatever. But I mean, it's weird that it's number 4 on his top 10 list. He has a lot better movies that should be number 4. Like. A documentary called Crossing the Line about a guy that defected to North Korea during the Korean War is narrated by Christian Slater and holds a 90% rating and is hit in his top 3 because he narrated it.
Wow.
Could be a great documentary, but again, another oddity just because it's connected to his name, you know? It could be on a top 10 list of documentaries or whatever about wars, but the top 10 roles by Christian Slater? No, it doesn't really belong on the list. Solid number 2, 93%, 1989's Heathers, where he plays JD, who's kind of like...
That's my movie.
They compare him to Nicholson in this movie, right? They say like... Well, people either give him shit or they accept it, that he's doing like a hammy version of a Jack Nicholson impersonation through the whole movie. But this is one of his best movies. He plays like a really edged character. Maybe a sociopath, maybe not. Skips around and falls in love with a Renault Ryder's character. It's probably her most famous movie. They made a TV show about it now. They may have made a musical at one point. I'm not sure. I think they tried a musical. Probably. They make a musical out of everything. Or maybe I'm thinking
of something
else. I
forgot they did a show of this. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, they did a show.
It kind of came and went. Yeah.
What's the thing is, like, his character's disturbing, but... He does such a good job that you, like, don't just care about him, but you actually like his character. He's doing terrible, awful things, but you like him anyway, because he did such a good job.
He has such a charm and charm to him. Yeah,
that's what it is—a dangerous charm.
Dangerous charm, as I say. Yes.
Solid number one. It's hard to argue against it, unless like one of your favorites deserves number one. True Romance from '93 with a 93% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. As Clarence Worley, the lonely comic book store employee who watches movies, watches a lot of Sonny Chiba movies with midnight kung fu marathons, and then he meets this girl and is caught up in like the crime world, and then Gary Oldman's like a drug dealer, goes up against Clarence in this movie. This is a good movie. This is a Tony Scott movie. It's pretty good, but there's some things that are left out.
It's written by Quentin Tarantino.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, he didn't get
to
direct
it. You can totally see like there's so much about Christian Slater's character that kind of is Quentin Tarantino.
That's true.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like you're like, oh, this is almost like an auto. This is like your fantasy of what would happen if, you know, you met some girl and then got into this crazy crap.
But you know what doesn't make this list? Cuffs, Untamed Heart, The Wizard.
I know.
Prince of Thieves.
Yeah.
Young Guns 2. He has a lot of great movies.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm looking through it. I don't think they base it on anything more than what the Rotten Tomatoes score is. I don't think they base it on anything.
No, these are like just watchers. These are just user ratings. They're just people upvoting or whatever, you know?
Oh, these are the viewers, not the Rotten Tomatoes score?
No, these are not critic scores. These are audience scores. People watching the movies.
I really don't understand then.
That is wild, yeah. Wow.
Because, like, not even Murder in the First gets up there? Like, that's a great movie.
Hmm. Well, I mean, I would have been happy if his Will Scarlet from Prince of Thieves got on the list. Or, God, he has this crazy name, like, Wild Dave Rudabar or something like that.
Arkansas Dave Rudabar.
Yeah, there it is. Arkansas Dave from Young Guns.
Arkansas Dave. And then they're always fighting. It's always been your group, you know. You're so awesome.
Yeah. So that's mine. I would want Pump Up the Volume. My top three are Pump Up the Volume, Prince of Thieves, and this last pick for mine would be something that I just go back to and watch all the time. I've rewatched Hard Rain like probably 5 times. It's stupid, but I love it.
It's fun. Yeah. It's fun.
I just love the movie for some reason, you know?
I've never even seen that one.
Oh,
I remember
God,
when it came out.
Oh my God, you're breaking my heart. We've talked about this before.
It's a good one.
Yeah. So what about you guys? Like, is there anything not on the list that should be like in the top 5, top 3, maybe number 1 picks?
Mine, okay, I got a tie for 3, and it's going to be Broken Arrow.
Oh, that's a good one.
Okay. It's a freaking good one. And True Romance, my second would be Cuffs, and my first is Heathers. That is a genius movie.
I mean, you know, you kind of named a few of them. I mean, I'd say, I also say Untamed Heart. I haven't seen it in years, but that's a great movie.
Yeah.
I say Murder, like I said, I say Murder in the First. Heathers is a given. I mean, a lot of these are given. You know, Interview with the Vampire, he was the guy that did the interviewing.
Which ironically, he took over for, you know, originally it was supposed to be River Phoenix.
Oh, that's right.
And he died, and Christian Slater actually gave his salary to, like, I don't know what it was, something, but he took over the role for River Phoenix. Unfortunately, which sucks, you know, but yeah,
there was of course there's also Gleaming the Cube. I don't know if any of us mentioned that.
No, we didn't, but that's a good one too. Yeah,
there was a movie, I don't know, it was a TV movie, I don't know if any of you guys remember this, but there was a TV movie with him from the 80s where he played like a disturbed kid that was like terrorizing his parents. Does that ring a bell to anybody?
No, I don't know what that
is. Is this a fever dream I had?
Maybe. I know there's one he did called Desperate for Love, but I don't know if he was terrorizing his parents. I'm not sure. Maybe. I don't know. It's good, though. He has had a really good career. I tell you that. I like the guy.
Yeah.
Christian Slater, can't go wrong. So, that's my list. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you.
Oh, wow. All right, questions from out there. Let's take a look. So I put up this thing called Playlist of the Week. It was the Movie of the Week entry on our little video series that we release every Friday. Talk about what we're watching, what we're into, what's new with the podcast. And then I was talking about this movie that came out in the 90s with Emilio Estevez. Let's get it right. It's not a Christian Slater movie. It's Emilio Estevez. Called Judgment Night. And, like, him and his friends go out on the town and get in trouble with these, like, drug dealer dudes. And they chase him through the city, like, in the middle of the night. It's kind of entertaining. Skip it and miss it, maybe. It's got, like, Cuba Gooding Jr. and Jeremy Piven play the other friends. But the soundtrack is, like, amazing. It's, like, one of the best movie soundtracks out there. And that was the point that I was making. So I was mentioning this, and then some guy on Facebook's like, well, you didn't tell us the title of the movie. And I'm like, what an idiot. It's implied. And if you watch the whole movie the little video about the movie that I made, and the videos aren't that long. This is what blows my mind about attention spans. The video I made is, like, less than a minute, 45 seconds. So clearly he watched 10 seconds, right? He didn't watch all 30 seconds for me to say, I'm going to go listen to the Judgment Night soundtrack. They're implied that I was talking about Judgment Night the whole time. You know what I mean? I'm like, It's got Run DMC, Cypress Hill, De La Soul, Faith No More. I also mentioned Drive because it has Nightfall by Kaminsky, which is, like, a now super famous song in that I movie love that Drive, song. Right? And great then, like, song. There's a cover of Under Your Spell in that movie that's pretty good. So I just happened to mention, like, three movies, and I had brought up Judgment Night, and then, like, I was like, you know, what can you do? It's Facebook. Sometimes it's cool. Sometimes it sucks. Sometimes people are just really fucking stupid. and I doubt the guy listened. I doubt the guy listened to the songs, and I doubt the guy went and watched the movie. And, like, that's the whole point. Like, we're sharing movies we're watching, and the intention would be, hey, you might like this too. Check it out. And, like, maybe tell us if you've seen this movie. Like, that's what's hard, to connect to the right people, because clearly I didn't want to connect to that idiot. Want to connect to people that might be looking for a good movie to watch on a freaking, you know, Friday night or something. You know what I'm saying?
This guy's going to come get you, John.
He's going to get me. Yeah.
This guy. He's going to come find me.
I got a lot of courage behind my microphone. Huh?
Yeah, I know. You're talking a lot of crap on this dude.
Talking a lot of shit. And we'll be right back after these messages. No,
yeah. Good luck, John.
Holy shit. Yeah, thanks. Which brings us to, what are our dream projects? Your movie, your way. What's the genre? What's the length? Who's the star? And what is the plot? Does anybody have a good one? And you can just tell me.
I got one.
You got one? What is it?
Go for it.
The movie. Okay. And I asked John about this earlier. I'm like, can it be like in a different decade? So this is my movie. The movie came out in 1995. It's called Till Death Do Us Part. And it stars Winona Ryder and Christian Slater. I'm keeping on that theme, guys. I got it. About this couple who just got married. And then they get in a car accident. And Winona Ryder's character was supposed to die, but she lived. And now death, like, you know, like death, like the guy with, you know, the Grim Reaper, so to speak.
Yeah.
He's coming to get her. And he's played by Gary Oldman. I mean, picture 1995 Gary Oldman. And it's just this awesome, like, horror scene after horror scene, a chase. And, I think it'd be a really cool movie. And I would have loved to have made that movie or seen that movie in 1995. So that's my dream project, so to speak. The movie can still be made today, but this is my fantasy world, and this was the cast I wanted. What about you guys?
I'm not really partial to anything. I don't want to say I'm becoming as bitter as, like, somebody like John Carpenter. Like, I don't know if you've seen him lately in interviews.
John's on a roll tonight.
He's, like, burned. Like, I was watching, like I'm watching this documentary, and, like, he's, like, talking about how, like, he couldn't make the horror movies or the movies he made in the 80s today, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, he just seems so... Yeah. Besides that, it was, like, a general attitude vibe that I get from him that he's just, like, so bitter and unhappy and, like somebody pissed in his Cheerios or, like, kicked his puppy in the head or something, like that he's just constantly had a run of bad luck, or like he's just really pissed off. And I'm like, why are you so fucking pissed off? Like, you created some of the, like, people's, like, most favorite movies of fucking all time, or like, you just sick and tired of, like, being old, like, you just no longer relevant. Like, I just don't understand why he's so pissed off. But except for I'm a little bitter, so I don't even want to make movies anymore, honestly. So I don't have any dream projects. It's a funny question to have to answer. Like, I've almost made that vampire movie a couple times. It got passed around in agencies. It had, like, stars and directors attached at one point. It had, like, money attached, and then we're going to proof of funds at banks. Like, it was in a Canadian agent's hand, and, like, they paid me not to make it somewhere else where they give you a few grand and, like, they hold your movie basically under lock and key and say, we might make this movie. Then, you know, the option expires. It comes back to you. Like, I just sent it out again recently, and I'm like, shit. Do you guys remember Mark, whatever his name is, who made the Leprechaun? Mark Jones made the Leprechaun stuff, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
His producing partner from that other movie that they made, the little killer movie with Billy Zane, one of the producers was talking to me. I rewrote the entire movie.
Sadie, right, or something?
Yeah, yeah. I rewrote the entire movie instead of being like a $3 million movie. I thought it was going to take like $3 or $10 million to make it, whatever. I wrote a $200,000 version, cut out half the characters, rewrote it for Las Vegas because they wanted to use a location that they secured because the Heart Attack Cafe guy, who was a doctor, but apparently, like, he claims that his burgers can give you a heart attack if you eat them, opened a cafe in Las Vegas and wanted a movie to shoot there and was going to put up, like, 200 grand. I'm like, okay. So my movie had 7 characters. I changed it. It had three or four characters and then blah, 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 you know, shoot half the movie at this guy's stupid restaurant. And, like, then they went off and made, like, some clown movie that's fucking terrible and took her forever to get paid on because the producer on that was a piece of shit. So I'm like, so how many of those kind of things can I don't want to have dream projects anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to get my hopes up about making movies. Like, I don't even understand the point anymore. So whoever, thank you for ever asked this question because you sent us down this.
Real with it.
Yeah, you sent us down this dark, dark path. Dave, did we answer yours already? You got the Expendables Christmas?
is that your dream project, Dave?
Yeah.
Yes, in my heart, yes.
Yeah. Dave loves... Actually, if Dave could get a Hallmark Channel deal, I think he'd be set. He could crank out 25 Christmas movies, not just one.
I'm telling you, I bet we could independently just make a Hallmark movie a year and sell it and make our nut for the year.
Wow.
I like that.
I'm going to change the order of this episode around a little bit because we're going on and on. It's exciting, but I'm going to move this around. I'm going to jump into... We'll be right back after these messages, and I'm going to tell people about Acorn TV. Okay, so there's a world of entertainment options out there, and by that I mean there's a lot of compelling international shows you may be missing out on. It's time to burst the domestic TV bubble and check out Acorn TV. Acorn TV is a commercial-free streaming service that's rooted in British television. It's home to sophisticated and artful storytelling with top-rated mysteries, addicting dramas, heartfelt comedies, and so much more. Unlike other British streaming services, Acorn TV has content from Ireland, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and beyond. If you're a fan of quirky British comedy, then The Other One is a must-watch. It follows two sisters from very different worlds who had no idea the other existed until their father drops dead. And if you're Downton Abbey fans, The Other One features a hilarious performance from one of the cast members from Downton Abbey. So check that out. And I always find something new to watch on Acorn because it's loaded with thousands of hours of binge-worthy content. You can stream on all your favorite devices for just $5.99 a month. Basically, think of it as like renting one movie or like watching one streamer, like Miss Fisher. And they have a new movie that came out. It's called Miss Fisher and the Crypt of Tears. And that springs from a series called Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. And it's actually Essie Davis, who played the mother on The Babadook. So if you really like that kind of Australian drama, that kind of performance, you should watch Miss Fisher. I think if you're ready to escape to Britain and beyond without leaving your seat, you can try Acorn TV free for 30 days by going to Acorn TV, acorn.tv, and use my promo code BingeWatchers. That's acorn.tv, promo code BingeWatchers. You can get your first 30 days for free. Now, back to the show. Okay, tonight for Summer Slash, we're covering Baskin, which is like a Turkish horror movie, and it's really intense. Let's go to first impressions. That might be my first impression, I don't know. Let's go to first impressions of this movie. The Cliff Notes, don't read me the entire novel and don't ruin it for the audience. Not yet. Not exactly yet. Maybe by the end of this episode it'll be ruined for them forever. But first impressions. Nick?
Visually horrific.
Dave?
Dark and Moody.
I'm gonna go with Utter Darkness. The pause has to be included, like 3 dots, 4 dots, 6 dots, then Utter Darkness.
Yeah.
What is this movie about? Okay, let's see. First of all, I want to translate the title for everyone. Baskin means raid, and it's the first feature by John Evan Nall. That's what's funny about his name. It's spelled C-A-N, but in Turkish, it's pronounced just like John. Apparently, it's a common name in Turkey. So, dude's name is John. Which is a hilarious coincidence. So, John Evan Nall. I can't say it with the Turkish accent, obviously, but this is his first feature. His influences are David Lynch, George Romero, and John Carpenter, who we mentioned a little while ago as being like one of the most bitter guys ever. after Baskin, our buddy John from Turkey is going to do a horror movie called Housewife, which I think is on Shudder right now, or was on Shudder. I didn't know he did that movie, Housewife. It's a pretty twisted movie, too. Then The Field Guide to Evil is an anthology horror film that just came out recently. That's his movie. And then there's this weird apocalypse movie that I want to watch. The next thing I'm going to watch from this filmmaker is called The Girl with No Mouth. That just came out last year. It's on my list to get to. I haven't got there yet, but I will. Baskin, I know it took me a long time to get to what this movie's about, but Baskin is there's a police squad that goes to hell, but as the nightmare plays out, it seems like, and you kind of get the feeling that it seems like they've been in hell the entire time, or they're like awaiting judgment in like purgatory, and it's just like a circle. Because, and whatever their sins are, it's really hard. There's some stuff that's definitely lost in translation, right? There's some Turkish cultural stuff that I don't think an American audience is going to quite pick up on, but it's basically five dudes that know each other that well. There's like a father and son included in there. There's an uncle that raised a stepkid who's like the main character, and then they're all buddies. They pick a fight with a stupid dishwasher boy at the restaurant in the beginning of the movie. That was unnecessary, right?
Yeah.
But then they get a call to go to this weird, like, apparently it's a bad side of town. There's these rumors and stories about this one neighborhood that nobody wants to go to. Nobody wants a police call down there. So they go down there. I guess it's their equivalency of like a ghetto or something. It's like a disturbing area or low-income area or something, and they don't want to be there. And then they meet like what looks like the hillbillies from like an Appalachian tribe or something living out in the sticks. And then they go into like an abandoned police building, and it's hard to tell whether it's like a, I guess it's supposed to be police barracks in an abandoned city, like a bombed out city, like if it had been through like the Serbian war, some kind of war or something. And then like, but, and this feels more like an apartment building, but apparently it's still supposed to be like an abandoned police station. But I swear the call that they get is from them later in the movie when they're trying to get their radio to work. Like they're calling, like I said, everything feels like they're trapped there. They've been trapped there forever. And then it cuts back to the restaurant where the movie starts. There's a lot of camaraderie here. Like, the movie sets up like this, like, pretty good, like, calm before the storm scenes. Like, some crazy shit's about to happen. These guys care about each other, and so it's going to feel even worse when they start to die. Like, the movie does that part pretty well, if I got to give it credit on one thing. And so, I guess that's my favorite bit, the calm before the storm setup. Like, the idea that there's enough, like, banter between these guys that when the shit hits the fan, you're going to be like, oh, it sucks that that guy's dying because he was just great. He was doing good in the last couple scenes or whatever, you know? Like, then I'll go to you, Nick. Did you find anything interesting, like some kind of part of this movie that you liked or that just stood out?
I did. I love the style of, I think I went more technical. I loved how this movie looked. I love the blue tones. I'm probably like, you know, sometimes a movie looks so gorgeous that I get so caught up in that sometimes more than what's going on. And I felt like I love the blue tones, the yellow tones. I love the color scheme he did and the editing and the effects and just how kind of dark everything is. Like each one of us described this movie as dark, and it is. And also a lot of kind of reminded me like some of it, like a Hellraiser in times or Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah. It was really like it was taking the best of a bunch of horror movies. So I'm guessing I'm saying my favorite bit would be just what this director took from other things and made it so cool and unique for a modern day style. Hmm. I really dug the look, I guess. I guess the look is my favorite bit. I think it looks gorgeous.
Right on.
And, you know, like we've been watching, like so many 80s, sorry. Go ahead. And like we've been watching like so many 70s and 80s and like 90s movies that it was neat to like, what was that German movie we watched a few weeks ago? Like something like that. These modern movies, it's so cool how visually beautiful they are. I'm not saying like those old movies sucked visually, but it's just neat to see like a modern movie do it so beautifully. Hmm. I liked it.
Dangerous. How do you feel?
You know, just like Nick, I think it was very well put together. This is a movie, if I had an opportunity to watch this a second time before the show, I would have loved to, because kind of like you said, I think John said there's some, I think, cultural things that don't get lost in translation. This is also, I mean, there's parts of this movie that dragged, but then when it picks up, it picks up. Some of the gore, I mean, this was a lot gorier than I had anticipated, so that kind of took me off guard in a good way. Especially, like, there's a stomach ripping that really kind of bothered me in this movie.
See, that blow didn't really hurt me that much, where they're ripping out the fake guts, like, because I thought they didn't look real to me. That was too dark and too, like, the texture was wrong, so I didn't buy it as guts. Getting hit over the head with the hammer bothered me.
Yeah, that was pretty bad, too.
That was pretty gross, yeah.
Sledgehammer, yeah, I mean, people. It was pretty bad. Pretty gnarly.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie. I just wish I don't know. I mean, I'll be honest. I watched this kind of like when I was not the most awake, just because I'm just was tired. But even with that, I just felt like it feels like something that needs to be picked apart a little more. It doesn't feel like a one-time watch.
Well, let's put it on the scales of justice here. Binge now, binge later, binge never. Who wants to kick it off? I guess I will.
I'll go after you, John.
Okay, yeah, I'll go first, then Nick, then Dave. Right. We'll tie it up. All right. So, okay. It's a binge never for me, but not for the reasons that it's a terrible movie, don't ever watch it, it's a piece of crap, you're going to waste your time. No, it's because it's like super disturbing, so this would not be the first horror film that I would recommend to my friends, especially if my friends didn't watch horror films. Like, if I knew you hadn't really watched horror films and you're just like, you think E.T. is scary, or if you're like watching freaking, like, I don't know, 101 Dalmatians or something, like, if horror movies are not your ticket, then I'm not going to say, like, yeah, turn on Baskin. So I binge never to protect people that can't handle really crazy shit.
Yeah.
So, but a binge later, same tone, like Friends That Descend Into Hell. There's a good movie about the catacombs of Paris. It's a found footage type deal. As above, so below. Right?
Yeah.
So that's my binge later. And then binge now, if you want a crew that has camaraderie, works together well, and you're like, oh shit, they're about to get really fucked up, I feel bad for them, they don't know what's coming, Event Horizon, about a spaceship that goes to rescue another spaceship that's already been to hell and back, and they don't know it's possessed, and they get in there and they're like, oh, we're all fucked now. And then the hell plays out for them. So that's my binge now. Those are my roundups. Going to you, Nick.
All right, I'd give this movie a binge later. I really liked it, and I would recommend it. I would say a binge never. Since I brought up Nightmare on Elm Street and Hellraiser, I'm going to say binge never would be Nightmare on Elm Street 6. And binge now, it actually would be Hellraiser 2, since I brought those two movies up.
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm going to say, I'm also going to say binge never on this.
Oh my God, I'm the only one. Wow.
I mean, I could say, I mean, people could do where, I mean, maybe I'd even say binge maybe, but I kind of feel where John's coming from. I'm going to say a binge later, something that, because I didn't like it the first time I saw it, but I kind of came around to it on a second viewing, about people exploring a fucked up area. I'm going to say a movie called Session 9. It's kind of a ghost psychological thriller. Watch it more than once. I didn't care for it the first time. I'd definitely give it some patience. And I'm going to say a binge now movie I've covered on the show, actually in the catacombs, spoiler alert, but to tie it to people that end up in hell, I'm going to say this 1970s Tales from the Crypt movie. Very British, and it's also British. I don't know if that connects anything else, but so that's mine.
I still need to watch that Tales from the Crypt.
You should put that on your list of version. Things to do. Yeah. We don't need. I don't think we need to do a final thoughts because we kind of tie that into like our favorite bits, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we can just go to what else have we been watching, and then we'll talk about what's coming up for next week. So, hey Nick, what else you been watching this week?
I just started watching this series on Netflix called Money Heist, and it's really freaking good. It's like this. It's dubbed over for American version, but it's about these people who are going in to rob the Royal Mint. And I guess that's a place where they produce money, you know, like it's like money machines. So they go in, they take all these hostage. And what they do is they want to have the cops buy time. They want to be in there because the longer they're in there, the more money they can produce. And I'm only on episode 4 and it's really freaking good so far. I really like the show.
Nice.
John, I didn't do a reality show this week. Just saying.
Well, it's good. Taking a break. We don't have to go out and derail the whole episode for a side discussion about reality
shows. Don't hold me to next week, though.
Oh, sure, yeah. We'll be recording right back on it next week. What about you, Dave? What have you been watching?
I've been watching a lot of stuff, but I'm going to just mention two quick things from one director two opposite ends of the scale. I watched Legend again recently, and I know this has come up on our show a lot, but I sat down and watched it for the first time in like close to 20 years on like my brand new good TV. God damn, that movie looks fucking amazing. Like, if you haven't watched
the Blu-ray?
I do.
Yeah, okay.
And if you haven't watched it for a long time on a modern TV, it is like next to Blade Runner. I'm going to say next to Blade Runner, it's his best looking movie, or like in terms of world building. And then I also watched The Counselor, which is also Ridley Scott, which is a very different movie for him. And if you've ever wanted to see Cameron Diaz fuck a car, and that's go watch it.
What does she get on, the gear shift, the stick shift?
Yeah. Yeah, no, she gets on the windshield and like grinds her pussy. I mean, she just grinds against the fucking car.
Why? Why would you do that?
Movie too? Yeah.
Fetish or something? Is
even in the movie, the characters are confused by that too. So, in all fairness,
dude, she came to the set that day on Molly or something, and just like went to town.
Yeah,
it is actually one of those. It is a weird fucking movie.
You like we're gonna keep that take in. We don't know what we're gonna use it for, but it's staying in the fucking movie.
Well, like in the first 5 minutes, you've already got Penelope Cruz begging Michael Fassbender to finger fuck her. Like, no lie.
So this was Ridley Scott, I'm Exploring My Sexuality movie. Is that what it is?
You know, it's kind of like Ridley Scott's Showgirls. Like, it's kind of campy, kind of trashy.
They should have released it as that. So you are good at marketing, David. Ridley Scott's Showgirls. I'm going to make a note of that. Podcast notes. Ridley Scott's Showgirls.
Let's name it.
Man, if we were still making jokey titles for our episodes, that'd have been a great episode title.
Oh, I know, right? Yeah.
I watched Umbrella Academy. Well, I'm like halfway through season 2, which just dropped like I think a couple days ago from when we were recording this anyway. And that's like one of the best things on Netflix. Like every time I tune into like a Netflix movie or a comedy special, I think, "Oh, this is the best thing on Netflix." But I was reminded why I liked that show like within the first 2 or 3 episodes of season 2. It's well done. It jumps through time periods, so you get to see like different decades, and they're actually doing a pretty good job of like the houses, the clothes, the characters, and each person has a unique power because there's like 6 of them, right? They're like 6 superpowered kids that like were born, but there's like this whole time travel element to it. Like there's an agency that polices time, and they start fucking with these superpowered kids. It's a good show. I don't know if you guys have seen any of the Umbrella Academy stuff.
I have not, no, but I hear it's good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's based on a graphic novel, but... and the other thing I dived into, I'm halfway through this, like, 4-hour documentary that feels just like a really long YouTube video, but that's all right. It's, like, interviewing all the horror icons from, like, the 80s and 90s, and this is where I saw, like, a very bitter entry by John Carpenter. So I'm like, dude, what is wrong with it? What happened to one of my heroes? It's called In Search of Darkness. It's also on Shudder right now.
Oh, I've been wanting to see that.
Year.
Yeah,
it's like never Never Sleep Again. You know how that one was like 3.5 hours? This thing is like clear your schedule.
I'm an hour into it.
You know?
Isn't Sean in that?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
He's all over it.
Right? Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
But basically, I thought it was pretty bold of him to say, like, he basically drops that Friday the 13th is directly from a result of him going to see Halloween.
You know what I mean?
I was like, wow, okay. Like, he doesn't even try to say it was an original idea. He just literally says, I watched Halloween, and then I made Friday the 13th. I'm like, all right.
Sean's very blunt. Yeah. He'll tell you.
But he said something, I think he was the one that said something pretty poignant about younger viewers, like teenage viewers. Like,
what did he say?
He said something about like them being closer to their sense of immortality. So the deaths and the deaths in a horror film doesn't affect younger people the way it affects older people. I was like, wow, I was thinking about this. Like, yeah, man, you get a little bit older, you start to have experiences, you feel less energy and immortal as you go along, and then you start to have things to lose. Then you start to have anxiety, panic, worries, responsibilities, and then watch a horror film. Totally different experience from when you were 14, didn't give a fuck, could conquer the world, and were watching a horror movie to be enthralled. Watch a horror movie now, and you're like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. If this happened, it would fuck up my whole week. You know what I mean? Like, oh my god. You know, totally, totally different experience. That was a very poignant thing, I thought. And I think he was the one that I'm crediting him, but I think he was the one in the documentary that said it. It's hard to pay attention to that documentary because it's so long and they jump around between like all the interviews. But it's cut like a YouTube video. I'm like, why didn't they just release this as a YouTube series? You know, with the interviews broken up in sections would have been maybe a better way to reach people. But anyway, check it out. It's 4 hours long.
It's basically how I'm watching it because I'm like, okay, oh, they've just finished up talking about this movie. That's a good place to cut off. Like, I think I just finished watching a section on Cue the Winged Serpent. Like, I'm, because they do it, year by year. You're further into it than I am.
Oh, you're talking about... Nice. Because Cohen's in there, too, before he died. He's actually in this documentary.
Oh, God, I love that movie, Cue the Winged Serpent. That's such a good one.
And then our credit song tonight, folks, is going to be this song called Witch's Butter by Isaac Joel. And that'll take us out for this episode. Nice. We're blazing it right through the horror movie marathon this summer. For summer/2020, we only got a couple movies left. We're doing Angst next week, followed by Lord of Illusion, and then we're wrapping it up with Scream 1980.
I'm looking forward to Scream 1980 because I have no idea what it's about, and then Lord of Illusions, let me tell you.
But I'm actually looking forward to the next... I mean, I think I haven't seen Lord of Illusions, but I'm looking forward to the next three shows, though.
Yeah, you guys told me Angst was good, so I'm excited about that.
Angst is a slasher on a different level. Like it feels almost like a documentary.
Interesting.
I mean, you'll see.
Sounds good to me.
You will see, folks, next week as Dave says.
I will see. Yes.
Oh, whoa.
let's have Christian Slater take us out. Go ahead. Take us out of the episode, Christian.
Mr. Sulu, can I come back into your room?
Yes, you can. That sounded like Sean Connery. I'm sorry.
Yes, you can. This is Christian Slater. It was a great time to be on the Binge Watchers podcast again. Love you guys. Keep doing what you're doing. And greetings and salutations. And as Nikki Late says, shit got real. We'll be right back.
Everybody wants to party. Everybody wants to party.